Auburn football's offense is going through a complete overhaul, and we're going to talk about it.
In a world full of podcasts, he's the undisputed heavyweight champion of hot takes, an Auburn sports homer, master of the book, and message board legend. Get your buttons buttoned and your hats flattened, because the Top Button Podcast is about to kick off, and you don't want to miss your courtside seat. Now, here's your host, Charlie Fly.
Yes, sir. We are back. We are healthy. We got our energy. We got our voice back. We're feeling good. Finally feeling like myself again. And we are ready to rock and roll and have some fun. But before we get started, we got to give a shout out. Every single show, you got to give a shout out to our boy Ford Stokes with Active Wealth Management. Check him out, activewealth.com. Look, you've worked so hard to save your money. Let's reach out to Ford and talk about how you can protect and grow everything that you've built this far with a custom plan, not some basic cookie cutter thing that you can get off of Google. You're going to call Ford. You're going to break down your goals. You're going to break down everything, and he's going to help put you together a plan to get you where you need to be. Big Auburn fan, loves the Boog as well. So give him a shout. If nothing else, just to tell him War Eagle. So shout out Ford Stokes, activewealth.com. That's Ford Stokes with activewealth.com. Folks, it's been a rough couple of weeks for the C5 household. The flu has ravaged us, but I think we're on the back. I think we're on the good end. I think we're on the upswing. I've totally got my voice back. I'm not going through that cough thing where y'all had to suffer through it. I did an episode probably too early, and I felt like I just was coughing the whole time, and it was terrible. So I think I'm good. Think I'm ready to talk some football, talk some recruiting, and then talk some basketball, and then go on a little rant here at the end over basketball seating. So for those of you that don't know, I also do a golf podcast, and we record live from an establishment in Auburn called Bunkers. It's a simulator bar, golf simulator bar and restaurant, and it's just an unbelievable fun place to hang out. But last night when we were recording, you had a someone you might know, Peyton Thorne, came to have dinner, and he jumped on the podcast for a segment. So one thing that he said that sort of jumped out to me that I had a complete misunderstanding of last year. He says that this offense this year is completely different from last year. When I say completely different, we're talking new names for new terminology that everybody's having to learn. You're talking new plays, new formations, new everything, new philosophy, which is sort of surprising to me, but it starts to make things about last year make sense. A lot of the things that Hugh Freeze would say, I would love to jump in and you know, call plays, but it's a complete, you know, it's different than what I like, that what I do. When it seemed like he was calling plays, it wasn't for like the rest of the season, or he couldn't just jump in and call plays in the middle of a game, because it was literally a completely different offense. And I guess I sort of had, and I think many had the understanding that it was maybe a collaboration, but it really wasn't. It was Philip Montgomery's offense that was 100%. He was the guy. And then there was a few games where it felt like Hugh stepped in and called plays. But when you do those times, when he had those weeks and things like that, maybe the Georgia game, maybe the Alabama game, where it was a heavy collaboration with a little bit of Freeze and a little bit of Montgomery mixed together. The problem is, for him to be able to call plays, he would either have to learn how to call the Philip Montgomery play that would match up with the play that he wanted to call, or he would have to completely install his version in that 1 week, which is incredible to even think that that's possible. So you're starting to understand why I'm starting to understand why, A, there seemed to be such a disconnect on offense, because when this is the first year Hugh didn't call plays, and it was a completely new offense that he couldn't just like, you know, double dutch, just kind of, you know, wait and then jump in and go and call plays. This was something that he was either in or he was out completely. There was no like halfway put one foot in, halfway take a foot out. I mean, it was completely different. It was completely different. I mean, that's exactly what Peyton said. You're going to see it on, if you follow the Dad Bod Golf Pod, you'll see that interview tomorrow. I'll probably snip that whole interview. It's about 5-6 minutes long, and post it on this channel by itself so you can see it. But very interesting. You don't expect a lot to glean from, you know, interviews and stuff like that. But the idea that we're learning a whole new offense, I think that may have a lot to do with maybe the at least perceived lack thereof momentum in maybe recruiting and things like that, because those first two practices, and it also may be why the practices are stretched out so far like they are. So you have so much time to pound in, I guess, the install portion, the study version, you know, the go home, learn, so that we're not just like having inefficient practices. We're focusing so much on the actual coaching and building this team aspect that it sort of takes away a little bit. You're having to lean more on those off the field recruiting guys, where Hugh and the position coaches aren't necessarily driving the recruitment, so to speak. So I think the recruiting aspect's going to start picking up here soon, and we'll get to that in just a second. But I found that very interesting, and it sort of starts to kind of fill in and make things make a little bit more sense. So what does that mean for next year? I just think it means that the clock has been accelerated, and Hugh maybe sees something in this team, in this roster makeup that is, you know, maybe excites him, or he sees potential, and they are coaching the crap. They're going to coach the crap out of these guys for spring. This is a very valuable spring, and they're putting a lot of emphasis on the pack, on the practices, spreading them out, so you got more time to install and things of that nature. So I don't know. Take that for what it's worth, but we're going to see a completely different style of offense, a completely different style, totally a completely new offense. The value there was, hey, we got another year, guys, another year in the system. But in reality, it's another year where Auburn is completely changing their offense for seemingly the fifth or sixth year in a row. But I don't think it's necessarily going to be a bad thing. I think, Hugh Freeze is well known as one of the best play callers. He's always been known as one of the best play callers in college football. And when I said there's a new captain, when I said there's a new vision, this just emphasizes that it's a completely new direction on offense. And I think for all of us, after what we saw last year, this should give you at least a little bit of hope, maybe, you know, that you don't see a repeat. You're going to have a completely new look, a completely new style to get behind. And I think that should be, you know, at least give you some sort of excitement to look forward to. I'm very excited to see the differences, see how it plays out on A-Day. Peyton was very complimentary of Cam Coleman. He was, I tell you one thing he was seemed very excited about was the offensive line. I obviously wanted to go in right on the wide receivers in the new recruiting class and things like that. And he was like, man, I'm telling you, this offensive line, those guys gelling is big. They're going to be good. So, and we talked about how much of an addition Percy Lewis is and how he makes two more positions. He makes his position better and then two more positions better on the offensive line just by adding him. So pretty cool. It was cool of him to jump in. So I think y'all are going to enjoy that. But that comes out tomorrow, and I'll put it on this channel as well. So let's shift gears a little bit. Spring practice started back today. Okay, so you had the week off for spring break, which kind of fell right in the time that the dead period ended, and kids could start coming on visits that literally opened the week of our spring break. So you got campus is closed, students are gone. It's no fun to come in on a visit. You're coming into a ghost town. You get no experience whatsoever with students around and things of that nature. So we didn't have a ton of action on visits last week, but they kicked off in a big way. Today you have a five-star offensive tackle on campus, and then you have a massive list of visitors coming this weekend, headlined by five-star quarterback Juju Lewis, Julian Lewis. And I think that there's going to be, you know, just when you get somebody like that to come on campus, even if you feel like you're a long shot, it gives you sort of the sparkle, it gives you sort of the excitement, and then kids want to come visit whenever he's coming. So Auburn recruiting is going to be fine. It stinks, okay? It's no fun that for 2024, I believe you're net negative one on commits. I think you've lost two, one to Alabama, and then you've gained only one, albeit a really good addition. But then you see the news, you lose one of your top wide receiver targets to Alabama. So you're like, man, what's going on? Like, why all of a sudden, you know, you got them where you want them, and then all of a sudden they start popping off some commits. I think they flipped Antonio Coleman. You got Ryan Williams on signing day, which, you know, stunk. And then so you get Ryan Williams, you flip Antonio Coleman, you land Derek Smith. You're one of Auburn's top receiver targets. And then I think they landed another, you know, four-star-ish athlete. I don't think he was it's not like it was a blockbuster addition, but you see all that. And in the meantime, you know, doesn't really seem like there's a lot going on at Auburn, but I think that's about to stop, pick up really, really quickly. You have roughly 25-ish players scheduled to visit over the next 2 weeks through the end of March. And I still, I still expect, you know, 3 to 4 commits for March, I still think that's going to be the case. I think you still got, and they're all going to be, you know, highly rated guys. You could see that start this weekend. Again, the emphasis early has been on install and practice. And then there was the weird spring break. And now you're going to see the recruiting really, really start to pick up. So it's going to be something to watch. It's going to be something fun to follow over the next couple of weeks, because I think the ball is going to start rolling. And I honestly, I'm just going to say it. I don't want to sound like, you know, little brother or you got to do stuff because Alabama does it, but Auburn really needs one on the board. I really think they do. I just don't think you can let, especially when there's a little bit of, you know, there's a little bit of doubt or uncertainty, you know, the Saban effect is no longer. So you got and then Hugh even kind of mentioned it, that the door may be a little bit open. Well, if the door's open, man, go in there and shut it. You know, that's my mindset, is if the door's open, get in there and shut it and lock it. You know, don't let anybody back in. So I think you can't sit back and just let them roll off commits and you just sort of don't adjust anything you're doing. So I don't think it's panic time, but on the same token, I think you got to push, you got to get one on the board for, you know, to sort of ease your fan base's mind on things that are happening. And then to show recruits, hey, we're not just going to just sit here and, you know, let Alabama and whatnot run amok and roll recruits up. We're here to battle too, and then go ahead and get you some on the board, fire some shots back. I'd love to see Auburn run off, you know, two or three in a very short period of time. And I think they got the ability to do that. I think they got the relationships to do that. I think they have I think we lead for some really good guys. You know, Travers Dice. It's like, what's the hold up there? That one could go at any point in time. Cardae Smith, another big offensive tackle. maybe you run both of those two offensive tackles off, and then you got a pretty amazing start to your offensive line class. Anquan Fagans, you feel really good with him. Safety out of Thompson, huge in-state kid, top 10 in-state kid. Would love to get one of those on the board. And then you got Eric Winters too, who you're sort of reevaluating the position that you may be recruiting him at with the defensive change with DJ Durkin. You know you still want him, but now you may have to resell, you know, this star position in this you know, hybrid safety, which is what Eric really is. You know, he's 190 pounds, freak athlete that plays quarterback and linebacker. Imagine that kid, you know, being able to do a little bit of both, play a little bit of safety, walk down in the box and hit people in the mouth. Would love to see you go ahead and get all those guys on board in March. And I think there's a really good chance you could possibly do that. And, you know, I'm sure there's other guys that are right there that we haven't even mentioned that could go as well. You always got Alvin Henderson, you know, one of your top running backs on the board that you feel like you're at least right there in the top two with that you could push for. There's guys that are there. You just got to go push and get them. This landscape of recruiting is completely changed. It's not so much of a dating. It's not so much of a long dating relationship, it seems like, anymore. It's like these kids know exactly what they want. You know, and you know what that is. They're going to come in. They want to know they're going to be taken care of from an NIL perspective. They want to see the depth chart and where they fit in. And then from there, it's a full court press. It seems like that's the way it's shifting. It's like, go ahead. They want to be pushed to commit early. And we may have to retool a few things on our side, but I think we have the infrastructure now to be able to handle that. You got Will Redmond and all that off the field recruiting staff to manage all that. So again, not time to hit the panic button yet. I think we're about to really get on a roll. The visits are incredible. The visit line, I think you have at least including a 2026 five-star. I think you have 5 to 6 5-stars scheduled to visit over the next 14-ish days. Can't be mad at that. One of which, Tyler Atkinson, is from Grayson High School, and you know who else is from Grayson High School? Is Kenyatta Watson. So that might be one to watch for 2026. So a lot of good stuff going on in recruiting. We're just not quite at the point where we're ready to push and get commitments, but I don't think that's very far off. I wouldn't be surprised if one popped today, like before we, you know, you may be listening to this show and we've popped off of one. I think that ball is about to get rolling. So hang in there. It's coming. Before we move on to basketball, you guys have to check out plainscoffee.com. I got a package on the way right now. Use coupon code BUTTON for 10% off. Freshly ground the day before it ships. I ordered some a couple of weeks ago. Could literally smell it on the doorstep. It's that fresh. It's that good. If you're getting coffee anyway, why not support an Auburn business and save money doing it and then not have to get out and go get it? Just have it sent straight to you. They got the roast for everybody. You can go as dark as you want. You can go as light as you want. And then if you just want to get away from coffee, they have teas too. So check them out, plainscoffee.com. Use coupon code BUTTON for 10% off. Okay, let's shift gears to basketball a little bit. I could not be more excited about this SEC tournament and the NCAA tournament outlook for the Auburn Tigers. They got the best draw you could possibly get, in my opinion. You have South Carolina, your first round, probably. They're probably going to have to play Arkansas, who, you know, Arkansas is talented. Regardless of what you think about Eric Musselman, he's a pretty good coach, and they're hot. They almost take down Alabama in Tuscaloosa, pretty much led that whole game and lost it right there at the end by, you know, I felt like they had the game-winning play and had a tough no-call, tough no-call on the road. But regardless, Arkansas, you know, Arkansas or South Carolina, I couldn't ask for a better draw. I feel like South Carolina is a good team, but they have consistently played well above the talent level that they are. I think they're like fourth in the country in luck, which is essentially we're playing above our averages, or we're playing above where we typically play, which is good, which is good. You want to play above your potential, but at the same time, eventually you got to come back to reality. And Auburn's playing hot basketball right now, as hot as you could possibly be. So I didn't want to play Kentucky. You know, that's a bad matchup for Auburn. Their guards are incredible. I think there's projections now that Shepherd could be a top 10 pick. Like, guy went from undrafted to not undrafted to not even really talking about the draft, gets red hot, and now you're looking at him as possibly one of the top 10 picks in the draft. And then they got Dillingham and several other guys. It's Kentucky, man. It's Kentucky, and it's March. It's March. They peak at this time. Those young five-star guys finally figure out how to play together at the end of the year, and they seemingly do it every single year. And I would not be surprised if I know they're the favorite to win the tournament, but I wouldn't be surprised if they actually won it. But you avoid them the first round. And I kind of felt like we were going to teeter on the verge of, if we were going to be the four, they were going to be the five, or if we were going to be the five, they were going to be the four. But I think actually now they're all the way up to, I believe, the two seed. So Kentucky, you dodge them, and then you dodge another really hot team, even though they just lost to Vanderbilt at Florida. And Florida matches Auburn up really well on the inside. They're huge. Their inside guys are huge. They have length. Their guards are big. They frustrate us. They're not mega athletic, but they're just big. They muddy the game up and make it to where you have to earn every single point. And if you get in a, little slump like Auburn did shooting on the road at Florida this year, they can punish you. They can punish you. They're not flashy, but they make it happen. That's just a bad matchup. Auburn dodges them completely. They wouldn't play either of those teams until the championship game. So you get the winner of South Carolina and probably Arkansas. And then if you win that game, you play Tennessee, who by all accounts, you could have taken one. You could have stole one from them in Knoxville. It took a historic game from a historic player. Don't get me wrong. Dalton Knecht is unreal. He is he's going to be somebody that is talked about. This year is going to be talked about for a very long time, but he went off. He scored 39 points, and it wasn't like he was getting layups. He was making three after three. I think he shot, I think he made like seven, it was crazy. He played unbelievable. It took that though to beat Auburn. Auburn was in the game late, and we were punching. For every punch we took, we gave one right back. You had Chad Baker-Mazzara that will go down and hit a three. You had Janiah Broome, who would go score inside. I mean, it was blow for blow there. It was an unbelievable game. And then eventually if you missed one shot in that scenario, in that whole series, you were going down essentially another possession because Dalton was not missing. I think in the last 11 minutes, he scored 25 points and only had one turnover and one missed shot. So it took that to beat Auburn on the road. So you give me Tennessee on a neutral site, even if it is Nashville or even if it is, a Tennessee friendly area, I don't care. I don't care. It's not Knoxville. The gym's going to be bigger. That's going to be spread out. You're not going to have the fans bearing down on you regardless. So it's something that I feel like the upper hand, I guess all the advantage should go to Auburn in that scenario with the way we're playing. And I just think that's an incredible, I just think that's the perfect storybook draw for Auburn. It's the best draw that you could have had. The only way it possibly could have been better, but we would have all been super stressed out, and we may still end up playing Alabama. But the only better scenario is if somehow you got paired up with Alabama on that second matchup. You know what I mean? That second matchup, when you win your first game, the only better scenario is if Auburn played Alabama that second round, because I just feel like it's just not a good matchup for Alabama. We're too physical. They play no defense, and we're so efficient on the offensive side that they would have to hit a pile of threes, which they very well could. They do have the ability to do that. But again, that's what it would take to have to beat Auburn. I believe in that matchup, and Auburn's one of the best 3-point defense teams in the country. So I don't know. I just like that matchup. To me, that's the only one that's even better. But you know, from a stress perspective, you probably want to play Tennessee, because obviously you don't want to lose. You don't want to lose to Alabama, period. But you definitely don't want to lose in the SEC tournament. So I haven't been this excited for an SEC tournament in quite a while. I would say back all the way back to probably the Okoro year, where it got shortened by COVID and the SEC tournament got canceled. That's the most excited I've been about a team. That's the last time I was this excited about a team going into the SEC tournament. And that even includes the Jabari year, because if you remember, we were slumping and we limped in to the end of the year, and I just did not feel good about us going into the postseason, because we had no shooters outside of Jabari. We had a terrible shooting end to the season. Luckily, you had Kessler, who was unbelievable on defense. You had Jabari, who could, you know, he seemingly could shoot it from anywhere, and he would always be there to make a shot when we needed it. But no, I just haven't been this excited, because we're peaking at the right time. Can you imagine a better ending scenario for the last game going into the tournament than Denver Jones hitting 7 threes? Like, I can, and you drawing up plays to get him open to shoot those threes. If Denver Jones is shooting 40%+ from three in tournament play, Auburn is going to be an absolute problem. We are going to be a problem for a lot of people. When you have the slashing ability and the mid-range jump shot that Chad Baker brings to the table, and he's still, heck, he's close to a 40%. He may be a 40% three-point shooter in conference. You got that, his ability to get to the line and knock down free throws. Then you add Jalen at full strength, who, if you get him in the paint with a left hand, forget it. It's 2 points, maybe three going to the line. And then he can step out and hit a three. You got Chaney Johnson, who gets a chance to step in and play during Jalen's absence. And he's gotten better every single game, to where he's not one of those survival subs, is what I call him, where you put him in to steal some minutes, to give your guy a breather, and you just hope you survive while they're in there. No, he's actually a scoring factor now. You get, let him get coming downhill baseline, he's going to put you on a poster. He can step out. He's shown the ability to step out and hit a three. He hit two big threes in the middle of the week this week on the road at Missouri. He is playing great basketball. He's working on his inside game. He's got that little jump hook working, and he's just a freak athlete as well. So you got that, and then obviously you got Janiah Broom, who can do a little bit of it all, can step out and hit a three, and he's shooting an incredible threes at an incredible rate, and then his inside game and defense is just incredible. He got snubbed for Defensive Player of the Year, but he was SEC first all team in general. I thought he should have been a shoe-in or very close to SEC Defensive Player of the Year. But, you know, regardless, he's had an unbelievable year as well. So the key is all of these guys are playing well right now. They're not slumping. your last five games, you led the conference in three-point percentage. You probably were up in the tops in field goal percentage in general. Over the years, over the last several years, going all the way back to that Okoro year, you saw sort of like maybe some shooting fade off a little bit. I think it was just a accumulation of several different things that led to that. But still, you're shooting at an incredible clip at the end of the year, and we're about to get after it in this SEC tournament. And Auburn, I think Auburn is the second best odds to win the whole thing. So you feel good about your first game, whether it be out Arkansas or South Carolina. Tennessee will be a battle. I love Auburn in that game. And then you got the winner of probably a Kentucky or in Florida or a Kentucky in Alabama. I think Florida's going to take down Alabama in their first round game. That's a bad mismatch for Alabama. When you get to that championship, all bets are off. I still think Auburn can beat – there's only maybe a handful of teams that Auburn, I feel like, it's just going to be a really tough hill to climb to beat. But there's not many. And I don't think any of them are in the SEC. I don't think there's any team in the SEC Auburn can't beat. And I don't – Kentucky would be the closest maybe, but just because of the way they're playing right now. But I still think Auburn – you know, if they're playing the way they're playing on a neutral site, I don't know. I like Auburn's odds. Maybe I'm just a homer. Maybe I'm just booging. But I love this team. I love that they're peaking at the right time. And I'm looking forward to a fun March and hopefully on into April. So let's see what happens. I want to go on a little rant here for a second. Seeding for the NCAA tournament, Auburn seems destined, I guess, to be a four seed, and not only a four seed, but like the last four seed, which would put you at, you know, around 16, the 16th overall seed. Now, granted, these are prognosticators, these are bracketologists. They're not part of the committee. They're not making the decision. So, all of this whole rant could be for naught, and Auburn could end up being, you know, a three seed. But one thing that drives me insane about the people the talking heads that talk about seeding and things of that nature is they talk out of both sides of their mouth whenever they are breaking down certain teams. On one hand, we value the net ranking, which is essentially kind of like the BCS. You know, that's your super analytical deal. It takes strength of schedule, margin of victory, where you win, stuff like that, how you do it, and it compiles it into this algorithm that nobody understands how it works, and then it gives you a net ranking. And the net ranking is how they decide what quadrant you're in and how you define a quad one, quad two, quad three win. Okay. So if you beat a team at home with, I believe, I jinxed myself. I said I wouldn't call. When you play a team that's at home, that's, I think, somewhere within like the top 30 in net ranking, that's a quad one game. If you play on the road, and it's like somewhere around 70 to 75 in the net ranking. They're using net ranking, and that's a quad one on the road. If you play at a neutral site, it's somewhere in the 50s. I think the top 50s, it becomes a quad one game. So they're using the net ranking to break up the quadrants. But then on the other hand, they will argue that you may have a substandard quad one game record, which is still a compilation of playing teams that are all put together based off of their net ranking. Auburn's net ranking is around six, okay, in the whole country. Another highly analytical ranking that Auburn ranks extremely high in, that's very well respected, is KenPom. And I believe Auburn is, Auburn is around fifth in KenPom. So explain to me how the analytics that take into account where you play, who you play, how you play, how bad you beat them, the scoring differentials, all of that, the efficiency ratings all on offense and defense, it takes all of that into account to give you a unbiased computer ranking. Explain to me how the sixth team in the country, the discussion is not, are you a 2-3, 2-seed, or a 3-seed? The discussion is, are you even going to be in the top 16 seeds? Are you on the, you're on the line of a 4-seed and a 5-seed because we want to point at this Q1 record out of one side of our mouth and avoid the net ranking on the other side, which we use to argue four teams, and we'll use this Q1 thing to argue, you know, the other way. You got the AP poll where Auburn's ranked. I mean, I don't put a ton of weight into the AP poll, but Auburn's ranked 13th in the AP poll. So you got a computer ranking that's unbiased, that's got Auburn at six and five, depending on which one you're looking at, computer rankings. You got the human writers who don't even play the sport ranking Auburn at 13. And then you got bracketologists who have Auburn, who typically are right, by the way. It's not like they're just making stuff up. Like, that's kind of how they're talking to people, whether they're talking to people on the committee or they know the formulas that the committee typically looks at. They have Auburn almost across the board at like the 15th or 16th overall seed. I don't get it. I do not understand it. I understand Auburn's 1-7 in Q1 games. Almost all of those were on the road, which you lost one home game to Kentucky. All the other games were on the road, and they were all close games, minus maybe the Florida game. You lost on a couple of possessions at between. You look at Mississippi State, and you look at Alabama. You lost with just a few, a possession or two. It makes no sense. It makes no sense. I don't understand how you can be, because here's the thing. The analytics already take into account, technically, that ranking, that sixth ranking, is taking into account the Q1 record. It's not called the Q1 record in the analytical ranking, but it's already taking that 1-7. That's factored in. That's factored in already. So it's not like the Q1 gives us a different picture of like who this team is. No, the analytics supposedly take all of that into account. They take all of that into account already. They weight the wins based off of how you win, where you win, what you do during that game, how efficient you are on offense and defense. It takes all that into account. And it takes the bias out of it. I don't get it. I've never been this conspiracy theorist that says, you know, that there's just a deal against Bruce Pearl, but I'm starting to buy into it. I really am. I'm starting to buy into it. I don't get how, you know, he's never seemingly in the consideration for Coach of the Year. I thought this year would have been a great year for him to be a candidate, and he – obviously, he didn't get it. South Carolina's coach got it. Maybe he deserved it. I don't know. You beat a team by 40, and you come out with the same or better record. I don't know. Seems like you did a better job with almost a completely brand-new lineup. You only had two returners with experience. You replaced your whole whole backcourt, and, you know, with just a little bit of experience from Trey Donaldson, and then you go and you win 24 games by double digits. You win all of your wins are by double digits. So I don't know. I don't want to be that guy. I'm not saying I I totally believe it. I totally believe in a conspiracy, but I got my eye on them. Okay. I got my eye on them because this whole seeding thing is really blowing my mind. It's real. I think the discussion legitimately should be, is Auburn on the line of a 2 or a 3 seed? And we're talking about, are they going to be a 4 and a 5? Like Auburn at worst should be a 3 seed. You know, I'll give you, if we're 6 in net, maybe you add another, maybe you could come up with an argument that they should be 6 spots worse. I don't know, something like that, but not a whole 10 spots away from their net ranking. That just makes no sense to me. So hopefully this whole rant was for nothing and we come in, we get a good seed, we get a good regional. We're somewhere in that 3 range. I love the 3 seed. But, you know, to be honest, on a neutral court right now with the way Auburn's playing, it doesn't matter. It doesn't matter. Unless you get matched up with like a Purdue or a UConn, I just don't see there's many teams that Auburn can't beat. Doesn't mean they will beat them, but there's just not a lot of teams that I feel like Auburn just can't beat. So we'll see how that goes. We kick off, we tip off on Friday. I feel like it's going to be South Carolina, could be Arkansas. Regardless, Bruce is going to have them ready to play, and I could not be more excited for tournament play. I couldn't be more excited to be back, healthy, feeling good. I can't wait for Thursday. We'll have all kind of practice notes and things to break down. I think they may put on some pads, start feeling a little bit more real, and get to see some more footage of some of these young guys getting in there and mixing it up. I appreciate y'all hanging in there with me. I hope you enjoyed the new intro. Really cool. Glad we finally got that done. And I just appreciate you listening. You can follow me on Twitter at @_Charlie_5. You can catch me in the Locked On Auburn Discord. The link is in the bio. And then obviously I'll be here every Tuesday and Thursday, barring some sickness, barring the flu. I'm going to be here and we're always going to have some fun and we're going to bug out. So I appreciate it. Thank y'all for listening. We'll catch you next time. This is episode 24 of the Top Button Podcast. Thanks for listening.
Thanks for listening and drive home safely.